talent doesn't really matter if you don't really have a good business mind, yep. or if you don't know how to market yourself, or mm-hmm. if you don't know how to make sure that people know that your music exists. I am a creative, but I'm also very entrepreneurial. If you're going to be an independent artist, you kind of need that.
I'm Joni Deutsch, and from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Amplifier, the music podcast where we shine a light on the Charlotte music scene. Because Charlotte is more than just a banking city or a football city. So each weekday during the month of September, we're going to explore the people, places, and things that help define the Queen City's crown sound. And today, an R&B entrepreneur who has the voice of Lauryn Hill and the hustle flow of a Forbes 400 boss. That's coming up on Amplifier.
Amplifier. And then the beat will drop.
Amplifier.
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 Can you introduce yourself and what you do in the music scene in Charlotte?
Yes. Well, my name is Arsena Schroeder, and I'm a Charlotte-based independent recording artist, singer-songwriter, and I own Dear Soul Music Company.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It says a lot, and but I want to go back to how you got started in music. What was the first moment that you realized music is what I love and what I want to do?
I did not have that realization until about 19. I always loved music, but it never crossed my mind that that was something like you could do as a career. It's not something that crossed my mind. No one in my family really that I was raised by is a musician, so. It took me, like, going to college. I had, like, a classmate. He was doing, like, a mixtape. And he was like, you should sing on the mixtape. And I'm like, okay, I don't really sing. He's like, no, you sing. I'm like, I don't really sing, do I? He's like, you're singing all the time. Never realized it. So I wrote for that project, and I just fell in love with the whole process from recording to writing and just really expressing myself, so...
If he's saying you can sing, you probably were doing karaoke, singing in the car. No, you weren't even doing that?
No, I think I just enjoyed music, so I was always dancing. I still do it now, like I just sing, like if I'm walking in the kitchen. That's what singers do. We sing everything. If we sneeze, that turns into a riff and a run. And so I think he just, you know, noticed that, and I'm glad he did.
But you didn't have, like, any formal or any kind of training in music or singing prior to that moment.
No, I did do, for my senior year, you try to beef up, you know, your resume for college. Mm-hmm. So I did gospel choir, and I really did not feel like I knew what was going on. I just imitated everyone else that was beside me. So so I did do that, and I enjoyed the camaraderie. I enjoyed the going out and traveling, getting to perform in front of strangers. But in a group setting, and I really did not know what I was doing.
Were there any other lessons you learned from being in gospel choir, though, besides, like, look at how others are doing and try mm-hmm. to replicate that?
I did. I remember Miss Suggs, that's her name. She taught us to blend well. So in choir, it's a little bit different than being a solo artist where it's all about, you know, you and in choir, you really complement each other. So I really learned to be, like, a team player. Really learned with gospel, it's very like you just go with the flow. So I learned to improvise and not just be so rigid and like, well, this is how we rehearsed it, so it has to go this way. So it did expose me a little bit.
So all that took place in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how was Charlotte back then for you when it came to music, besides, you know, gospel choir and then being on a mixtape? Did you were you one to like go out and see gigs or see concerts or shows? Mm-hmm.
Not really. I mean, my mom did lead the choir, like the worship praise team in high school. So I got to see a little bit of that. And then my father, my biological father, is actually a producer. He didn't raise me and was kind of in and out of my life. But there was this one time he took me to the Apollo. I don't know how I got in as a child. but that was a really crazy experience. But I didn't know much about the scene, you know. And actually when I started songwriting, I was doing a semester away in my schooling in college. So I was actually in DC, and that's when I got my first guitar. That's when I, started like experimenting with singing and kind of just, you know, started to process it more as like, I can create music, not only just enjoy it.
So at what point did you want to break out from the kind of compilations, mixtapes, gospel choirs into your own independent singer-songwriter mm-hmm. voice?
I would say that was in D.C. when I was doing that semester there. And I don't know, something just hit me and I ordered a guitar off guitarcenter.com. And I lived in a house of 16 girls at the time, so they were kind of looking at me like, you're crazy, and there's a guitar on the doorstep, go get it. And that's when I started learning. So everything that I was learning, like, musically, I just turned that into a part of my creative process to write a song. So if I learned a new chord, all right, well, to encourage me to practice these chords, I'm going to write a song around it, a melody. And so it encouraged me to practice because I wasn't like learning like, oh, this is drudgery, something I have to learn. It was kind of like, oh, this is a tool I can use to help me express and create something. So I would say DC was the first time I realized like, okay, like I can have my own identity through music.
Who are you looking to for inspiration as you're writing these songs?
So my influences change and evolve as I evolve. At that particular time, I was really inspired by and had just stumbled across Lauryn Hill's Unplugged album.
Adam lives in theory, trying to turn stone into bread, masquerading like he's got it figured out. Cut off from the sunshine, only smart in his own head, leaving his descendants to hope and doubt.
So just hearing her strip down vocals, guitar, she wasn't really trying to impress anyone. I really enjoyed the storytelling element of what she was doing. And I just remember hearing that and kind of feeling like, oh, well, I mean, it doesn't have to be this extra big production. You can start, you know, just with your story. And so I think that kind of creeped into my mind subconsciously of like, oh, okay, let me try it.
Yeah, I think with some artists, when they start out, sometimes it's like, oh, I need to start sprinting.
Right.
I need to get the full band. Mm-hmm. I need to get in the studio, kind of establish yourself as this big thing when you really need to take those baby steps forward and
right.
experiment with your sound, know who you are and what you want to make.
Right, and have room to kind of explore. And when yeah. you have this whole team and like people around you too soon, then there's like a pressure. So you don't want to do too big too soon because then you have to maintain that. And there's like a momentum. Yeah, and then you're stuck. And maybe that's not who you are anymore, you know. So I do appreciate the small beginnings.
How did your time in D.C. influence your growth as an artist?
So much. I still fantasize and think about D.C. I want to live in D.C. My husband promised me he would move me to D.C. And then he probably did not know what D.C. real estate looked like. And so we have not moved to D.C. But I think just being free and young at that time influenced me so much because I had room to explore. I could just get on the metro and ride. I would listen to a ton of music. I didn't have any responsibilities. And doing my college out there, it was an internship program. So I had a really flexible internship program. I worked fewer hours than most of the girls in the house. I had a paid internship, which most of the girls in the house didn't have. And I had some income. You don't have any bills at that age. So I had
No.
a little bit of income, no bills, and not really a ton of hours that I needed to work. So I think that freedom gave me time to really just sit down and start developing my craft.
So you're in DC, you're with the internship, you're starting out. What spurred you to get back into music down in Charlotte?
Well, so when I got back to schooling, I went to Pfeiffer University. There's two Pfeiffers. There's a Charlotte one, and then there's one on the outskirts about an hour outside. I went to the one that's about an hour outside. So I was back on my like academic grind and hustle. And there was like a Battle of the Bands competition that they have at the colleges. And so I had a friend named Brandon. He played guitar. And I'm like, Brandon, you want to play guitar for me for this competition? And he did. And I didn't win or anything. But he came back later and said, hey, there's this restaurant. And they're like paying for people to come and play music. And I think you should do it. And I was like, what? They're paying? All right. And I went down there immediately. And the manager's name, Chris, I remember him. He said, right on the spot, we'll sing. And I sang, and he, like, shut me up immediately and was like, Friday night, can you be here? And I'm like, okay. He wanted 2 hours worth of material. I did not have 2 hours worth of material. I did not have any sound equipment. I didn't have anything. But it worked out. And so that gig was very difficult. I really dreaded it because it pushed me outside of my comfort zone. And I always had someone to accompany me because I wasn't confident in my musicianship. And musicians, as they do, some of them are really flaky. They would just kind of, hey, can't make it, this and that. And so I stopped doing the gig altogether and ran into Chris one day. And he said, you got to come back. Everyone's asking, where's the girl? Where's the girl? And so at that point, I thought, okay, I need to be confident in my ability to play so that the show goes on, whether the musicians show up or not. And that forced me to really get really serious about guitar and get 2 hours worth of material.
That's a long show to do by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How did you make it through that? I mean, that must have taken some resolve to be able to get up on stage in front of a different audience each time and then play, you know, a mix of original covers.
Yeah. It's funny because it was difficult, but I also feel like that also is a big part of my craft now. I can do 4 hours now, just sit me in the corner, I'll go. But I think just I started creating, like pulling from the ability to improvise. So taking those songs and then putting my spin on it, and pretty much some of those songs back then, a 5-minute song might have been a 10-minute song because we're trying to fill this time. And I look back now and I'm like, it probably was really uncomfortable, but it was necessary because it forced me to write new stuff. It forced me to learn music that I probably would not have wanted to learn because I had to keep the audience in mind. And a lot of my songs are typically written on the spot. I created the ability to freestyle and make songs on the spot. So a lot of, majority of my songs are songs that came from a live setting where I just thought, okay, well, let me just sing what I'm thinking. And Baden Inn, that was the restaurant. So the Baden Inn, thank you.
I'm sure that helped with stage presence too, the fact that you're getting up there and you're having to sing to a crowd of 2 or 20 or 100.
Yeah.
And be able to just be confident in yourself to be like, okay, I'm going to play this the best I can. And if they laugh, they cry, they clap, I'm still going to be here playing great music.
Absolutely. And a lot of them in that setting, they make requests. So,
ooh.
Yeah.
What were some of the requests?
I will never forget this guy asked me to sing I'll Fly Away. And I thought, that is not really a restaurant song, but I told him, I was like, I'll do it. And he just sat back. He really enjoyed it. So I'm like singing I'll Fly Away. Oh, Glory. Made no sense, but that was his request. And then a lot of people then like kept comparing me to Janis Joplin, which I didn't get. But
really?
It forced me to like dig deeper into like, okay, who is Janis Joplin now? Why do you think I sound like that? And it really forced me to get outside of my comfort zone and learn other genres.
Yeah, I saw on your YouTube channel you've put up a few of your covers, whether it's Aerosmith on there.
Every time I look in the mirror, all these lines on my face getting clearer.
Was Tracy Chapman up there too?
You got a fast car, and I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we can make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we can start something, but me, myself, I got nothing to prove.
Your repertoire kind of goes across all kinds of genres, decades. Yeah. So after doing these kind of open mic nights, what was the first big thing that came about with your music career? That was like, that's it. This was my big breakthrough.
For me, I think the playing at the Time Warner Cable Arena is the Spectrum Arena now, but I think that gig was the gig where I'm like, oh, okay, this is like legit. Yeah, that's another crazy story. So I was playing at the Common Market. I don't know if you're familiar with Common Market here, which is a really small, like little dive. And that was my first time there, and I had never been to the Common Market. I did not know what to expect. So when I got there, I was a little caught off guard, and people were loud, and I didn't think people were really listening. So I'm singing. I did Turn Your Lights Down Low, Lauryn Hill's like interpretation of that Bob Marley song, and I did my song Manna. I did a few others, but there was I noticed there was like a couple that was really intentional in their listening while everyone else was kind of, you know, doing their own thing. And then afterwards, the guy came up and he was like, I can see you in a stadium with the lights down low and it's just you and your guitar. And I'm like, you know, you hear things all the time. So I'm like, yeah. And he's like, how many people have you performed before? And so I'm like, the most? I don't know. You know, we're going back and forth. And so he's like, I'm going to put my info down. You reach out to me. I've got something for you. I can see you in a stadium. So I'm like, okay, yeah. Put your info down. I'm kind of really dismissive about it. And then at the end of the night, when I was checking my email list, I looked. And his at was, it said Bobcats, because it was Bobcats at the time, not the, what are we now, the Hornets. So when I saw the email address, I'm like, oh, maybe he's like really serious. And so I emailed him. He responded right away and had me come in the next day to audition for the team that books the entertainment there. And he said, I want you to sing Turn Your Lights Down Low, just like you sang it. And there was a team of people, and I went down to the arena and auditioned, and they liked it, so they booked me.
How was performing? It was a halftime show, right?
No, this was actually like a smaller event. It was a Bobcats event, but it wasn't a ball game. It was more like a gala, depending on how you pronounce it. And they requested that I sing a Bruno Mars song.
Ooh, so which one?
It was Count On Me. So I was more like terrified because this is not my song selection. I would prefer to sing something in my catalog. But I got a standing ovation from Michael Jordan, so I think it was decent. And yeah, afterwards, I just did not know what to do with myself. So I kind of like just bowed and just kind of scurried off like, okay, it's over.
I saw that after, or maybe it wasn't after, but on the list of highlights of your musical career, you also were able to play a set for Grammy Award winner Fantasia. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like?
Okay, so I don't think I've ever told this story in an interview, but I was doing a random gig at this time. It was for a funeral, and did not realize that she was sitting right there in the front row. So I was glad that I did not notice that before I sang, because that probably would have completely threw off my ability to play, and I was playing an Aerosmith song. But yeah, I did not know she was there. And then later that week, I got an email asking if she could come to my next show that was happening that weekend. So we connected, and we've been in touch since.
Can I ask what Aerosmith song that was?
Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
And she's been in touch with you ever since?
Mm-hmm.
Because of Fantasia being like a regional beloved star for music, that she has so many accomplishments to her name. Has she been a sort of mentor to you, mm-hmm, in working through the music industry?
Yeah, that's one of the first things I asked her. Actually, one of the first things she said to me was, I want to help you. Those were her actual words. So I didn't know. I still don't really know celebrity, like, protocol. I don't really know. So when she came to the event, I was like, do I leave her alone or do I go say something? So I just kind of went up and I was like, hi, can I say hey? She was like, yes, come over. She was really down to earth. And first thing she said was, I want to help you. So she's been great. And then I went back after that and said, hey, you think you maybe want to mentor me? So she's been awesome. And she doesn't know this, but she's been awesome at encouraging me when I really needed it. Just getting for her to stop and take the time to get a text or a voice message from her. Like, she doesn't know, but it picks up my day, picks up my spirit. Because being an independent artist is extremely difficult. So, I mean, even just taking the time to let me know, like, hey, you've got something there, you've got a purpose, you're in your lane, keep going, I want to help. That's pretty much all I need.
You've been missing out on the greater things. Every time I look around, all the joy it brings. I get a rush when I'm in control. But I know that ain't what I'm really here for. So I sit back and watch things unfold. No greater peace than when I rest my soul.
Coming up, Arsina on her brand new release and how to sell music without selling out. That's right after this break on Amplifier. Hey, Amplifier friends. Time flies when you're discovering great music, right? Well, we've received a number of questions from listeners like you about the future of this podcast. Will Amplifier continue past September? And will we continue highlighting the Charlotte music scene as a podcast? To which I say, yes and yes. Right now, Amplifier is a daily podcast for September, and it will continue as a bi-weekly podcast starting in October, with new episodes every other week. We have so many musical roads left to explore in Charlotte, and we want you along for the ride. So do not miss a beat. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on NPR One, Apple Podcast, and wherever you find podcasts. You can find out where and how to subscribe to Amplifier on WFAE.org/Amplifier. And thank you for the support. As you're subscribing to the podcast in your favorite app, let's get back to our interview. So what is it that draws you to being and staying independent artist?
Well, I think the industry has changed so much nowadays, and I'm constantly still learning new things. But with technology, it's kind of really evolved things. And even like I was reading an article before I came here about just the majority of musicians and artists are making their money from touring. Because people can get your music and they will find a way to get your music for free. So with that, I think that empowers a lot of people that you don't need the backing of a label per se. I think that for me right now, ownership is important and learning those things. I'll never say I won't ever sign. Never say never. But for me, it just mathematically just makes sense to continue to own what you have going on.
Now, you have a company, and you mentioned it earlier in the interview, that you help with called Dear Soul Music. Mm-hmm. And what I saw online of it is that it provides resources for independent artists. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about the initiative?
Yeah. So Dear Soul Music Company, I don't think I ever started it like intentionally, like here is the company that I want to start and this is the business plan, blah, blah, blah. I just really enjoyed business. I thought that I was going to get my degree in business. That's what I went to school for. I had a full scholarship. I did a ton of business internships. That's why I was on Capitol Hill in D.C. I just naturally am very type A and very organized and very like boom, 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 boom. So with that and crossing paths with other artists and doing shows or things with them, I realized that that's not really common for most creative people. And I realized even with talent, talent doesn't really matter if you don't really have a good business mind. Yep. Or if you don't know how to market yourself, or mm-hmm. if you don't know how to make sure that people know that your music exists. And so I wanted to really create something that could help people with that other side of my gifting. So I am a creative, but I'm also very entrepreneurial. If you're going to be an independent artist, you kind of need that entrepreneurial bone. So we provide workshops. We actually are kicking off some workshops this fall in songwriting. And those are 18 plus. In the past, they've been for younger, like middle school, high school kids. So I'm really excited to do adults for the workshops in songwriting. And then we also offer branding workshops. So the branding workshops, we're just helping them kind of solidify who they are and the best way to market that to other people. And then we offer live shows. So with Charlotte, I felt like a lot of the venues were closing, and finding places that were listening room environments was really important for me as a songwriter, because at the end of the day, I can cover songs, but it doesn't really help me to sing a song you already know. You know what I mean? Not that that's a bad thing. You can draw an audience that way. But for me, my fans connecting with my original work, I realized was really helping me to be able to support myself. And so Unplugged and Live is the series. And so we provide that opportunity for songwriters to come. We're splitting the bill. Everyone's coming up and sharing their original content in a room where people are coming to engage and hear and listen to music, instead of it kind of being like wallpaper or something on the background that is to set the ambiance and mood. But people are coming to hear your song, what you wrote, what it's about. And just like I said with Lauryn Hill and how much that inspired me with her MTV special. So that's what we do.
Has Charlotte been receptive to you as an independent artist? Have you seen that same response when these other artists have come to you through Dear Soul Music?
I think so. I mean, I love doing music in Charlotte. I think because it's not overtly a music city. For me, I like that because you have the opportunity to be a big fish in a little pond, as opposed to when I've gone to like Nashville or New York, I'm overwhelmed. I'm like, whoa, there's so many people. They all do this and they all do it well. And so Charlotte for me has been a great place to kind of get my feet wet and to learn the industry. And also just to offer some new resources and kind of use my hustle. I call it my hustle spirit in a sound that's more Southern and a little bit slower than the other like mega music cities.
What are like the top things that you encourage musicians to look into if they want to succeed in being independent?
Oh, that's a good question. One of the most basic things, and a lot of the stuff seems basic to me, so I don't know if it's basic to them or not.
But, it's like secondhand for you, but right. For others, yeah.
You never know. It depends on the person. But one of the most important things is to think of yourself as a business. So register as a business because you are a business. You're a walking business, be it a sole proprietorship or an LLC or however you want to set up your infrastructure. Have an infrastructure that helps you to be able to be perceived as a business, because people will treat you and compensate you for your work a lot different. And if you're not a business, unfortunately, you're not professional and you're an amateur. And so you'll be compensated as such. So we talk about that in branding, day one of branding workshops, starting to look at and figure out what infrastructure might be for you. I don't have a legal background, so I can't advise them in that way, but I can just say, hey, this is something to think about. And then the second thing I would say is your press kit and making sure that you have just the basics, your bio, your professional photos, your links and kinks, I call them, so that people can see just in one place what it is you have to offer.
With some of the major venues kind of going under in recent years in Charlotte, I wonder if there have been questions directed to you for assistance on, how can an independent artist get to kind of what you experienced, luckily, being able to perform at a major, Spectrum Center. Mm-hmm. So how can they get to that point?
I would say just being consistent, kind of like how you asked after that gig, what did I do? I still kept hitting the ground running. So you need to be consistent. People need to see that you're continuing to take yourself serious, because people take you as seriously as you take yourself. So, but I would say if you continue hitting the pavement, do not wait for opportunities to come to you, but you create them. That's when people come knocking.
One of the many things that you do beyond just, helping independent artists is that you are one and you've released some really great material in the last few years. Starting out 2014 with your debut LP for My Artist Child. What was the process like in getting that up and running, getting that produced?
Yeah, for My Artist Child, my first little baby, full-length baby, I did a 4-song EP in 2012, and that was like the same time that I took the leaf. I decided to drop out of grad school, and I committed to doing music, and that project, I was actually listening to it today, which is crazy. I haven't listened to it in years. And I was just crying because I'm like, it sounds terrible, but I really was really passionate.
But it's yours.
Yeah.
It is your baby.
It was my baby. But because I wasn't happy with how it sounded, I was really intentional about wanting to record something else as soon as possible. So for My Artist Child, it's a mixture of things. It was me wanting to continue finding my sound, make something better than the last project. And then also I wanted to kind of push myself in the type of topics that I was willing to cover, because a lot of my stuff was really faith-based and really just me, what I'm processing. And for My Artist Shot was still probably very introspective, but I wanted to cover more topics that a broader audience could understand. So I talked about things like my dad not being there growing up. I talked about things like my marriage. Those weren't things I had ever really covered before. And it was all inspired by Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, which is a 12-week book for creative people of all mediums to really tap into higher creativity. And so that book really springboarded that project, so much so that the title was kind of paying homage to the book.
And since then, you've released a few other EPs, and you will be releasing your second your sophomore release this September.
Yeah.
And it's called Sleep Talking.
Yeah.
Lately, I've been pulled in many directions, doing what you want me to. And finding no time to read between the lines and do the things I love to. But I can't be all you want me to be and still reach my destiny. So I'm saying no, oh, oh, at least today, oh, I've got to be, yeah. I've got so many plans, got so many plans to do nothing.
Single that you've already released for it, So Many Plans, is gorgeous.
Thank you.
And I can see, I can kind of already see that with this release, it's going to have more production, more elements to it than your 2014 debut.
Yeah.
And you also are working with Jason Jett on this new release.
Yeah.
So what is this, this sophomore baby going to sound like?
I think that it is amazing. It sounds, it's everything I could have hoped for, because I have a unique sound and a different perspective when it comes to music as a singer-songwriter. But trying to make that commercially viable, I think, was my goal here, but still staying true to me. So don't sell out, but let's make it sell. So this project with Jason's mindset and him having been signed, and I'm more of the singer-songwriter, artsy-fartsy. I just want to sing about my feelings and play my guitar. And he's like, all right, this is how the industry works, okay? So with his kind of mindset to like oversee the music production, it's creating really, really good stuff that I'm really excited about. We're going to release another single, Into the Earth, and I was able to feature One Way North. And crazy story about her, she was actually my background singer for many years. And yeah, she's gone on to do her own stuff, but I asked her for this album, will you come back and feature and do a song with me, because I miss everything. And also there were a lot of things that she created with me live in our live shows when I was on tour. There was a time in the show where my song Into the Earth, I would let her freestyle. It became a regular part of, like, you know, just give me a second to breathe and give her a second to show her chops. And one particular night, the part that she freestyled was so catchy that I told her, like, okay, now we're just going to do that every night. So for the album, I wanted to remix that song and bring her back and include her on it. So she's on it, and I'm really excited about what it sounds like, because it sounds really, really cool. The song has evolved so much over the years.
I just want to be, I just got to be where you are. Entirely, I want the real you, not who everyone says you are. I don't want to eavesdrop, I want to know your voice from afar. They say do this and that, and it's sure to make us right. But what if it pulls us from your grace-giving life, lost like a sheep?
Well, I appreciate too how you're not just bringing your friends and music collaborators into this process for the record, but you also brought in the fans in a small way, because Sleep Talking was a crowdfunded record, successfully crowdfunded, which is congrats on that.
Thank you.
So I'm just wondering, I mean, did it go hand in hand with you being an independent artist that you were to crowdfund this, to make this an independent production outside of a label, outside of any kind of constraints on what this music was to sound like?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I've been crowdfunding since I started. This is the first one that we ever reached and exceeded our goal. But I've always been a person to leap and go for it. And so it was really nerve-wracking to crowdfund this time, because I hadn't reached my goal before this. I was a little nervous to be like, hey, guys, I'm doing it again, you know. but I told myself, go for it. The worst you could do is not reach your goal, and then you figure out another option. But the response that I got this time, I think, was a lot different from my fans and them just wanting to support With more than just their mouth, but with their money, that's always helpful. And so, I mean, I think that's a great model and another way to show that technology has kind of evolved this industry, because people pre-order is not a new thing, because that's essentially as a musician what crowdfunding is for an album. It's pretty much pre-orders. But I learned so much in that process and learned the best way to do it that I hadn't been doing with my previous campaign. So implementing all of that information and knowledge, I really enjoy Amanda Palmer. I don't know if you're familiar. She's like the queen of crowdfunding. So I like got her book and I'm reading up and I'm like, I still don't understand how they just give her all their money all the time.
Because like, she was part of the Dresden Dolls, right? I mean, she had like a big following behind her anyways.
She does.
And she's a great artist.
It's very, very.
Yeah, being married to Neil Gaiman will help you a
lot.
That
might do it.
Yeah.
But still, I'm like, she doesn't have clothes on. She plays one chord on ukulele, but okay. But she's awesome. But she's genuine. And I learned so much from her book, The Art of Asking, about that connection. And to just like see and read that, like, she learned how to crowdfund through, what was she being, a statue? I don't know where she lived, but that was her day job, like being a busker pretty much, and learning about the power and that connection between people. So taking that with me and bringing that into this process and making sure it was something that everybody could be a part of, it helps a lot.
What are your other hopes with your music? I mean, if there's something that you want your fans to get out of listening to your EP, your full length, your single, whatever, what is it that you hope that is imparted to them?
Mm-hmm. When I started out with this, I actually sat down and wrote out my intentions. And my goal has always just been to inspire people to follow their purpose and their calling. For me, I think because of the background and like where I grew up, my mind was always just run and chase that thing that's going to give you security and comfort. And it really wasn't my passion. And so I've always had a heart for people, like getting outside of the expectations that people and maybe society has placed on you and finding your unique, which is what the songwriting workshops are called, finding your or using your unique. But I always hope that people hear the songs and they feel like, okay, I need to really get my life together because I'm not really living in a way that considers other people and the talents and gifts that I have. How can they better serve the people around me? I always hope that people walk away feeling challenged in that respect.
Arsena Schroeder's latest release is titled Sleep Talking, available on arsenamusic.com and wherever fine music is streamed and sold. Amplifier is a production of WFAE. This episode was written and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Cole Del Charco. Our editors are Greg Collard and Jadon Marshall. Our theme music is provided by Dirty Art Club. You can share your favorite Charlotte music recommendations right now on social media. Just follow and tag me. I'm at A Change of Tune. New episodes of Amplifier drop each weekday this September, so make sure to subscribe to the Amplifier podcast on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, and wherever you find podcasts. For more Charlotte music chats, including playlists and even a Charlotte music map, visit wfae.org/amplifier. Until next time, I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.